All right. Let's do this. This is another one of those times where the music seems demonstrably slower to me than usual, and I don't know why. Someone wrote us an explanation a long time ago, and I don't remember what it was. Something about the plasticity of the mind. My name is Brock Dittus. Welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we simplify the good in life. And
I'm Corey Poole, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally, with a global perspective, and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering bicycling, trains, and transit, and simpler living, skateboards, and today...
Metro feats.
Oh, yeah.
How many feats? No, that doesn't work. Thank you again. That was the stupidest thing. Phil, I'm glad you don't hate me.
Well, at least it wasn't stinky feats.
That's true. That would be... Yeah. We have Phil Ip Ross. I realize I refer to you as Phil.
Yeah.
Familiarly. But I should probably... Philip is your full name.
Yes.
And the one you use in business.
Mostly.
So...
depends on what day it is.
We can cut this if you want me to. I can just like scrub it out and I'll just call you Philip from the start.
No, this is real.
You edit?
Yeah.
No. I don't have time for that.
Well, let's take it from the start.
So, Philip Ross, thank you for joining us.
Phil's fine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm all formal now.
Yeah.
Anyways, you recently built a bicycle for the famous Emily Finch, and that was delivered to her while I was out of town.
Well, I want to remind everyone that I actually don't build bikes as Jamie. I just stand around and watch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's cool.
Right.
It's a great job.
Potato.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course. But we got to, you know.
You're like a bicycle producer.
Exactly.
There we go.
Not the director.
No.
Not the key grip.
I'm like Chihuly, but without the fame and the money.
Oh, my God. And two eyes.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, no eye patch and less glass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do your bikes explode in the kiln frequently?
They could.
Oh, yeah. That'd be pretty
cool.
Depends
on what we're making.
That'd be pretty cool.
We're never going to get through this interview.
Well, no. That's just kind of the way it's designed. Which is why I turn my attention from the introduction to what I've been up to. We should also say Aaron had a work conflict that I think it came up kind of last minute. So he is regretfully stepping out for tonight. He's got a thing he's got to do. He'll be back next week.
Yeah.
And I don't think I can say enough how much I appreciate Aaron doing the show during the summer while I was away. He did a bang up job, as anyone who's been listening can attest to. And it's I don't take that lightly. So, anyways, thanks, Aaron.
Yay.
And in his stead, Corey Poole.
Hello.
Thank you. Yeah, I texted you, and you commute to Salem for your job every day. So
I was going
to
say that you dragged me off the street because I was skating by, but no, I was commuting from Salem.
So I text you like I think I had. Well, I was going to reveal that I had texted like three or four other people, and no one could make it.
Yeah,
which
I
makes
understand.
that comes across wrong.
No, it's
not.
Okay.
It's not like you were my third choice.
I'm like the fourth best. I understand.
Anyways,
I like the semantics of that. You're not my third choice. You're just my fourth.
It was supposed to be a compliment, I guess, and it turned out to be anything but. What I mean to say is I am very appreciative because, Corey, you stepped in with, I think, less than 2 hours notice.
Yes.
So thank you.
And I am appreciative to my wife and my in-laws for babysitting. So
oh,
this is good stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, here.
Yeah.
Nice. So, Corey, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Yeah.
Summertime.
What has been maybe the most notable event of your summer so far?
Oh, man.
What did you do with your summer vacation?
You know, I know I came on before and talked about the disaster relief trials.
Oh, yeah.
But I did it again on my skateboard in Portland, and it absolutely kicked my ass.
Mm-hmm.
And but it was amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Is that why you're going to Eugene?
I am doing Eugene in October.
Right on.
I will be hopefully better prepared. So I've been training a little bit.
You should see the weights he's been putting on his leg. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I would imagine, yeah.
I just sleep with them. I just kind of just wear one of those silver jogging suits and put weights on my legs.
It's high vis. It's great.
Right.
Yeah, it's very important.
I would say that's probably one of the best ways to train for something is to go to sleep with weights on your legs. Because then as you're kind of like tossing and turning at night, you're going to work out those muscles that help you turn over, help you roll over in bed. And... as we all know, those are the most important muscles for skateboarding.
Is this what I've been doing wrong? Is this my problem? Oh, my God.
You aren't doing that?
that sounds awesome.
The other fun thing I did, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I've been out of town this summer, and so I didn't get to go. Last summer, I got to go to the DRT, and I feel like I kind of missed out. So maybe I should go to Eugene.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in awe of your big trip you did, but like, I don't know how I would get by if I couldn't do all the bike fun in summertime in Portland. Like, there's just so much going on every single weekend event-wise that it's just like, you know, it's just nonstop.
It's a lot of allure to being in Portland in the summer.
Yeah.
I should try it more often. So, yeah.
Can I mention one more thing that was awesome? So we did the, on a bicycle, we did the Critical Mass camping trip.
Oh, yeah.
I missed that.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful. So Andy and Shell? How do you pronounce it?
Shelly.
Yeah.
Twitterless Andy, please respond.
Yeah, sorry. Andy and Shelly Schmidt organized it, and we went out to Stubbs Stewart State Park with, like, I think there were 15 families or so, and it was just amazing. It's like so great that you can just, like, take the Max out to Hillsboro and ride on out and be in the woods and camp.
Well, woods with full internet and phone charging. That's great.
There was no phone charging. What are you talking about?
Well, whenever I go out there, there is.
No flush toilet. There's no phone charging.
Stubbs Stewart is the premier destination. It's the one I keep recommending to everyone when they say, where should I go camping? I say Stubbs Stewart because it's easy. If you have a standard size bicycle, I guess anyone who has a cargo bike, it doesn't fit on the Max. It means you're going to ride a lot farther. Although I still recommend people read that article that Jonathan Miles wrote a long time ago about the family trip that they took out there, going over Saltzman, I think.
So you're not supposed to put your cargo bike on the Max?
So they say.
Oh, no, okay. You're really not supposed to. And what they did is Andy rented a U-Haul.
Uh-huh.
And so we all met in Northwest Portland, loaded all the cargo bikes on the U-Haul. Everyone took the Max out and then retrieved the cargo bikes in Hillsboro.
There we go.
I've got a sneaky way to cheat.
How's this?
See, the follow me bike is two bikes.
Yes.
So when my daughter and I go places, we have this follow me, which allows me to hook up my daughter's bike to my wife's bike, and it becomes one bike. And then when we get where we're going, when we get to the Max station, we just unhook, and boom, we're two bikes again. And then we get where we're going, and we hook back up, and we're one bike again.
So it's basically a tow rig for your daughter's bike, right?
Yeah, but it's rigid. It feels like a tandem almost, and so you could just, it's kind of like a tandem that turns into two bikes.
That's fabulous.
That's like 50 pounds heavier.
Yeah,
I've ridden on the Max twice now to Hillsboro with the cargo bike, and
how'd it work?
Never been stopped.
Nice. Interesting. Yeah. So, I assume this is not an endorsement. You're not telling anybody to go out and break the law, but
I should be actually. That's in my best interest. Please go on the Max with a cargo bike. Just disguise it as two big strollers.
Right. <We're fine>. Exactly. Yeah, that's the one thing that a lot of people have. I think it's caused grief to many people in one sense or another for a while. Just the fact that, if you have an unconventionally sized bike, you have problems on local transit, you have problems on long distance transit with Amtrak. Bolt Bus apparently does okay.
Yeah,
Phil,
they don't care.
Does Bolt Bus accept one of your bicycles?
Well, I've never tried Bolt Bus before, but okay. I can't imagine that they wouldn't put it on there. They, they're like, hey, if you have room, stuff it in there.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of their. I think that's kind of their policy, which is cool. Well, cool. That seems like that's a well spent summer, Corey.
Yeah. Oh, there's just been, like I said, every weekend it's just like, got to decide what aren't we going to do.
Right.
Because there's just so much going on.
Yeah. Fabulous. I did a couple of things that I thought were very interesting. I think I'm saying things that make me sound like a dick today.
It's the dick episode of this podcast.
I guess. what I meant to say was that, I think I mentioned my tire blowout, how I destroyed a tire on the last day of the tour. As I was rolling into Portland, my tire exploded.
Which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was just the right time for that to happen. But then like 2 or 3 days later, I started noticing I had this really weird kind of ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk thing. And I was like, what's wrong with my drivetrain right now? You know, because like it... It felt like maybe it would be something that's at the bottom bracket, but I just had that replaced. I thought maybe it would be a pedal, but not really. Was it a broken spoke, you know, because I looked down and the wheel was kind of like wobbling a little bit. But then when I got off the bike and spun the rear wheel, it looked like it was perfectly untrue. So I had no idea what was going on. It turns out I rode it home from the Motor Center where I saw Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, which was a good show. The guy puts on a fabulous show. I rode it there. I took the bus kind of partway into work because I still, you know, I was building my commuting time around the assumption that I would bicycle. So I took this bike that I was having problems with, my only bike. Well, my only regular style, my only safety bicycle.
Small bike.
Yeah, exactly. A small bike. And I took it on the bus and rode it kind of a couple miles into work. And then I dropped my VeloColt and said, hey, can you figure out what's wrong with this thing? So I put it in the line, and my mechanic Adam there, who also built my wheel, he puts it up on the stand, takes a look, and I'm over having a beer, kind of, you know, waiting for him to you know, do his work. And he walks over, and he's like...
Smacks you upside the head.
Like, man, your frame's broken.
There's your problem.
There's a big clue, Brock.
And then he says, you want to come see it? I said, yeah. So this bicycle that I have abused for 5 years, the Jamis Coda turned Aurora, it's... Basically, I believe it's toast, and I need to get a second opinion. I emailed a guy today, and Phil,
JB Weld. That's all I got.
JB Weld,
right,
yeah.
right. Sure.
JB Weld,
an electrical tape.
Yeah,
we had a listener recommend that builder, one time. I think he mentioned that the what was it, the carbon fiber bike that some guy was using to do the Tour Divide. I think he had like patched it together with JB Weld and finished the tour with it. Which is, I mean, wow. That seems like yep. So I'm not beyond trying that. But if it's possible to get a better weld, like a, you know, a more permanent solution, I'm open to it. So, Phil, you're a doctor. Look at my elbow. It's not even here.
Man.
But I need to have some folks look at it and say, like, you know, can I put this back together? Because I would like to save and buy a bike or bike parts and kind of build my dream bike to replace this one. But if I could, like, weld it back together and get some more mileage out of it, maybe I would. And I was also thinking that because it's a steel frame, and I've always talked about, like, you know, you can have anybody weld it. You can go to like some guy's garage in the middle of Wyoming and you know, weld it up. And it almost seems like now, having said that for so many years, it would be a waste to break the bike and then not weld it. So
yeah, I think you backed yourself into a corner there.
I think I did.
You pretty much have to weld it now.
Yeah, right up against the chainstay and the seat stay.
Have you done any welding?
I have not.
You should try it.
I should. Yeah. You got to have like. Some fire and stuff, right?
Sort of.
You rub two sticks together.
Yeah. Okay.
It's really fast.
Yeah.
Well, and is it on the tube that it broke? Like, is it where the... Is it actually a hollow portion of the frame that it broke, or is it where it kind of comes together?
I would have to look at it again.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe you shouldn't weld it.
Listen to the bike builder.
Seriously.
Why? What do you got to lose? You should try it.
I really should. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I mean, what else am I going to do with an old busted frame, right?
Yeah.
And then come down the Capitol Highway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
try it out.
or weld it, then send it in for an OEM repair. Hey, something's wrong with my bike.
Exactly. Exactly.
This weld is crappy.
Claim my warranty. Yeah, I think Tomas had mentioned to me, Tomas Quinones, of Coloring Book fame, among other things.
Yeah, just saw him tonight.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Name drop.
Yes.
Just saw him tonight. Yeah.
He's a good guy.
Riding around town.
He had recommended that, or not recommended, I guess he had said that, like, I probably couldn't get the warranty coverage, but it does say a lot of things about Jamis as a frame building company that... I've done what I have with the bike I have, and it's lasted as long as it has.
Yeah, it's a good thing you don't have like a podcast or some other media outlet and talk about their brand. I mean, that would be a shame.
Yeah,
I should get a little thing going here for this. You know, this episode brought to you by Jamis Bicycles, except not.
Do you have any idea how many thousands of miles you've put on it?
I don't.
It's got to be a lot, though.
I mean, it's been my year round commuter, and it's also been my touring rig. And so, yeah, it's got thousands and thousands of miles.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's crunch those numbers and put it on next show.
I should.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You can count on it. Great. Next show, you will have hard data.
Bum, bum, bum.
Probably not. So anyways, that and then on the polar opposite side, what I did yesterday and why I was so drunk yesterday and why I'm not drinking any alcohol today is because I still feel shitty from it. But yesterday, I went with some friends out to the polar opposite of bicycling and simpler living. I went to the, what's it called? The Combine Demolition Derby.
What?
That was happening in
where?
Banks, Oregon.
Oh, man. Whoa.
So on your way to Stubbs Stewart, actually, if you take the Max and ride out, you're invariably going to go through Banks.
I totally want to go to that next year.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that kind of stuff.
So what they do, they got the little sleds, you know, that they hook up to pickup trucks and that sort of thing, and they incrementally drop weight onto the ground to make it harder for the truck to tow. And so basically whoever tows the sled the farthest wins. They had a tug of war between a couple different things. And there was this Ford Explorer that did like a full on, it wasted this pickup truck, just like dragged it out of the park.
See, this is the proper use of the internal combustion engine. You know, this is beautiful stuff.
I've always wondered how that works. Like, are they spinning tires or is it just like a battle of the clutches or like how?
It doesn't matter, man. It's a spectacle. Who cares? Like, let it rip. Let the smoke out. Yeah.
It was a spectacle. And so the thing is, the show closer and what they do is this combine demolition derby where they get these big old combines and they just like get them all in a circle and they all drive into each other.
Oh, man.
It's a form of reuse.
I took video.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did.
You're going to put that up on the a link?
I guess I have to notes. Now.
Yeah,
I guess totally. I have to. So anyways, that's what I did.
Awesome.
And I rode out with a friend of mine who owns a party bus, and he took us all out there, and we drank a lot. And boy, kids, don't do drugs. So
stay in school.
Yeah,
stay in school.
That's right.
And avoid tractor pulls.
If at all possible. Yeah. So anyways, that's what I did. Phil.
Oh, man, I knew you were going to ask me this. I'm so terrible. What did you do for fun?
Nothing. Where were you on the night of September? No. let's talk a little about Metrofeets, because last time you were on here...
I can talk about that. Okay.
Last time you were on here, we talked about the Pedal Power Talk Show is really what we were talking about.
Last night. Jeez.
I know. We talked more about the Pedal Power Talk Show and less about Metrofeets, but Metrofeets is your day job, I suppose, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So you and... what was your fellow... Who builds bikes for you? You're the producer, and then
someone
else makes them.
Well, Jamie and I own the
business.
Jamie,
okay. Oh, and he's also co-owner.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, he probably wishes he wasn't, but
right.
Yeah, that's I won't let him go.
Yeah, yeah. And your specialty is these Bockfeets bikes that Bockfeetsen. Is that the appropriate pluralization?
You're doing good. Keep
okay,
going.
Good.
Good job.
apparently, those are the things that. We're not as common as they are today. Like today, you go to Portland, you're going to see a box bike rolling around town.
Yeah, multiple different kinds of box bikes from different manufacturers from all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that was not always the case.
No.
So what did you have to do with that?
Well, what did I personally have to do with it?
Sure.
I just totally got obsessed with this cargo bike that I saw. You know, there had been, there still is a manufacturer down in Eugene, Center for Appropriate Transport, or CAT, that made these really cool long haul bikes. They called them.
Uh-huh.
I think it's called long hauls, dude.
Yeah, I think they're long hauls.
Okay. Long John.
Well, Long John, but I think they called them the long haul. But they're pretty cool.
Pretty bikes.
Peddlers Express, had used them for many years, and they had this big fiberglass thing, like a marshmallow. It kind of looks like a marshmallow on the front of it that hinges up. It's like the Zardoz marshmallow.
Yeah.
Look up Zardoz, folks. You're going to love it.
Is that with an X or a Z?
Z.
Zardoz.
Sean Connery's in there.
Okay.
IMDb.
I saw a car.
Oh, yeah.
That's right?
Good. No, it's up at the Derby, right?
Yeah.
Stream of Consciousness podcast. All right. So where were we? Oh, yeah. The marshmallow bike.
Yes.
So, I'd seen those around town, but there was a woman that was... Gosh, it was like 2006 or 2005 who had come to Portland and brought one of the Bockfeets.nl box bikes in. And I saw her riding around with that with her kid in it. And it just something like the skies parted and I got hit with a lightning bolt and I couldn't stop thinking about it. And so I tracked her down while we were riding and just rode as fast as I could and caught up with her. I'm like, I'm so sorry, but I don't want to, be stalking you or anything, but I've got to see your bike. And she's like, yeah, whatever, weirdo. This is a box bike. Isn't it nice? And okay, here's where you can find them. And then I found another guy in town, Rick Wilson, who had one. And he let me borrow it. I mean, he didn't even know me. He let me borrow it for a couple of days, or almost a week, actually, because I think I wouldn't bring it back.
Okay.
having so much fun with it. But I was also keeping notes on what I really liked about it and what I didn't like about it. Not that it's a bad bike. It's just, you know, like, well, I live in, up a hill. And
there's room for improvement.
Yeah, totally. For me, yeah, of course. And so I took it over to Jamie's house. His nickname is Bicycle Jamie.
He's been, nice.
Yeah. It's like he had older, cooler bikes than I ever could hope to have. And that's how I got to know him when he was about 14. And I don't know how old I was, but older.
Yeah.
And yeah, he was like, oh, I'd love to do that. How hard could it be? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, have you ever built a bike? He's like, yeah, maybe if you've cut up a few and welded them together. I'm like, well,
that's like building a bike, right?
Yeah. So we actually decided to try and build some, you know, freak bikes. And I went to the library because, you know, that's the first place you need to go. And found this book called Atomic Zombies Bicycle Builders Bonanza. And they had all these really cool bikes in there that you make out of electrical conduit.
Oh, nice.
Oh, my. Things. This is everything you need.
Yeah, and you can weld with clothes hangers, you know. It's like just keep your face away from the smoke that's burning
think,
off.
Do
from
you
the...
think it's still at the library?
Oh, it is,
can
yeah.
I check this out?
Yeah, you can totally check. They have like 4 or 5 copies of it.
Oh, that's fantastic. So what's this called again?
Yeah.
Atomic Zombies Bicycle Builders Bonanza. And you can go online, too, and they have stuff you can download. So we built this thing called the Coyote, which we renamed the Magic Bike. Because if you could ride the thing, it was magical. It was terrible. It was so hard to ride.
So it was just a testament to your skill as a bicyclist.
Yeah.
To be able to stay astride.
Yeah. And then, okay, so we were like, okay, this is kind of working. And then, unbeknownst to me, Jamie was building a second version of that bike, and it was beautiful.
Right.
And, of course, it was his. Mine looked like a piece of crap. That was fine. Like, okay, well, let's try and build this other bike. And we started working on it. It took us about a year to do it. And the hardest part, I mean, we had questions like, well, when we're drawing it out, like, how do you measure from the ground up to the bottom of the box? Just stupid thing. Like, I can't even imagine. Like, I look at my journal now, and I'm like, wow, did I really wonder how to do that? That's just
right.
So bizarre. And I could have called any frame builder in town, and they would have been like, yeah, this is how you do it.
It's easy.
We've been doing this for 100 years.
And right.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Something that is now second nature to you is not something that always was. So
no, and I revel in that. Like, I have to, you know, if I'm feeling full of myself or whatever, I just remember, you know, if someone asks me a question and inside I'm like, oh, that's just the stupidest question ever. Why are they even asking that? I just remember, yeah, I remember you didn't know how far the ground was up to the,
there we
the,
go.
You know, it just, yeah,
it's highly
technical. It's a good reminder.
But you know, isn't that one thing that makes Portland so cool is that there seems to be a lot of people who are kind of clueless, but just do it anyways.
Yeah, and beautiful things come out
of
that, too.
Really amazing things. Yeah. Like, you know, if people started second-guessing themselves.
I mean, we wouldn't have rainbows and unicorns if that weren't the, you know, people.
That is true.
I mean, food carts? Look at those things.
No, seriously.
They're
yeah.
barely held together with duct tape.
Yeah, but people, it's a lot
of... I can be a chef, you know.
Yeah, a lot of really cool energy comes out of that, yeah. And people create these just, I don't know, lifestyles for themselves, I guess, yeah. For lack of a better thing, that then catch on and people start to experience that. And
some people make beautiful cargo bikes.
Yeah.
Right. So you have, you have a full-fledged business. How long?
I can't believe it.
From the time you started trying to actually like put together a Bock Feats or even before that, I guess, like a freak bike, like how long was it until you were finally a legitimate cargo bike offering business?
Oh God. It took us about a year to build that bike, and people found out about it. Partially because I'm a loudmouth, so you know, I was talking. Oh, yeah, we're trying to build this thing. It's really cool. Oh, don't tell anybody.
Keep it under your hat.
Yeah, exactly. As long as you tell all your friends, don't tell anybody.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah. So, I'd say we sold our first bike maybe a year and a half to 2 years after we started trying to build this thing. Yeah, it was about a year and a half, and you know, we built a couple other bikes after that. Just to make sure that, you know, that we weren't going to kill anybody. Mm-hmm. And we incorporated and got the insurance and just did everything right. Because we, you know, Jamie and I, from the very beginning, we were like, okay, maybe we will make this into a business. We just flow charted out everything. It's like, what are we going to call it? What do we want to do with it? Is it going to be made here? Are we going to job it out somewhere else? And we made all these decisions up front that we're still following, mostly. We're actually making money now, which is kind of fun. That wasn't part of the plan. we just wanted to break even.
That was
one of the things, like, man, if we can break even, that'd be really cool.
Totally.
And, yeah, so I'd say the first 4 years was more of just a hobby thing. And mm-hmm. we were just excited every time someone was like, hey, I want one of your bikes. We're like, no way. Wow, that's really cool. but then, you know, we started getting inventory and things started, you know, we're like, oh, where's that hub? We have hubs, you know, that sort of thing.
Have multiple hubs just sitting around.
Yeah.
Waiting to be built into something.
Yeah. And like, you know, the year that we bought like enough steel to build, gosh, about half a year's worth of bikes, we were just like scratching our heads from like, oh my gosh, what are we doing here? If we're going to do this, we really have to lock down and get the business going right and keep inventory and just do it right. So that's what we did. And I'd say in the last 4 or 5 years, we've really been buttoning it down mm-hmm. and making sure that we really just run the business like a business instead of
go.
A big hobby.
It's yeah.
a
crazy notion.
And it got so much easier once we started to do that.
Well, that's funny, isn't it? Because like, I don't know if it's counterintuitive or not, but it seems like if you're trying to run something as a hobby,
yeah.
then it'll kind of stay at hobby status. If you pull out a few more of the chalks and run it as a business, that's when like you have to make money at it because it's your job.
Yeah. And we were pretty sensitive about that in the beginning because it was our art, like this kinetic sculpture mm-hmm. that we were building. And yeah, it was a bicycle that, you know, had a box in front of it and other people had made it before, but we were really just into making it look nice. Like if we had a piece of steel that we had to chop off because it wasn't long enough or because it was too long, then instead of that, we'd put a curve uh-huh. in it so we wouldn't have to cut it. And
right.
it would just look swoopy and cool.
There you
and,
go.
Then we, yeah, it just, we were very just into making it look neat
yeah.
and work really well and everything have a dual purpose. If we could have a dual purpose on the bike, whether that was aesthetic or if it was like a handhold on the box, so you could pick up the box and tie stuff down with that handhold.
Do you have a favorite dual purpose feature?
Yeah, I like the beer bike because you can drink and get drunk.
There you go.
That's the best dual purpose.
It's for transportation.
So this is the one that's at, is this the one at Velocult?
The first one we made is over at Hopworks Urban Brewery.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I've seen that
and
one there.
That one has two kegs and... And it's really hard to ride.
I was going
to
say.
So hard to ride.
Yeah, so you need to describe this for people. Like,
so it has a really big wood inlaid bar top with the Hopworks logo. It's this lightning bolt on the top of it, which is really neat. And it has two towers for two taps, or a tower with two taps on it.
Mm-hmm.
And this huge, monstrous head tube in the front of the bike. It looks like something out of the Aliens movie.
Yeah.
Just nuts looking. And a big stainless steel, like diamond plate. Pan, or no, it's aluminum pan that holds the two kegs, and then what looks like the back end of a bicycle kind of bolted onto it. And
there you go.
Like, what the heck is that? With this wheel way out in front of those two kegs. And we were down at Hopworks one day, and we delivered it, and Christian, the brewmaster and owner, it's like, oh yeah, you guys can borrow this anytime you want. And it was so popular, we just could never get it back, so we built our own.
There you go.
Yeah. Sure. And then... like over time people started buying them, you know, for their brewery and then cold brew coffee.
Yeah.
People buy them for cold brew coffee and tincture. We have built a tincture bike, which is kind of fun.
Wait, tincture. So
it's in Washington. You kind of follow the thread there.
Oh, of course. Okay. So this might
bike. What bike? I don't see it. Where's the bike?
It's going to be for people that are
lots
that are
of
like,
extra compartments in that bike.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing some baking or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although they can, I guess now they can be out in the open about their use of marijuana because that's it's legal over there.
Oh, is that what that is? I thought it was just a tincture bike.
Not yeah. legal in Oregon and not legal in the United States, but it's legal in Washington.
Well, it's normally legal, you know, if it's a medical
right.
reason, right?
Right.
Yeah. This is not a call to action, right?
This is not a call to action. No, we're simply describing something that's happening elsewhere.
There you go.
I'm not involved.
Yeah, I'm just drinking coffee right now. Just
that's
back,
right.
Back off.
I was curious about... You've got Metrofeets. You're building them here in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
You're also sourcing most of the materials domestically. Is that right?
Yeah, all of the steel that we use on the bike frame comes from True Temper,
ah.
and they mill it in Mississippi for us. Yeah,
yeah.
And it's amazing to me that just, you know, bumbling around in the very beginning stages that we hooked up with them early on. And of course, like I said before, we could have called any frame builder and they would have been like, oh yeah, here's the number.
Right.
And we had no clue.
How did you decide on that as opposed to like going internationally?
Well, it was easy.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're here and they had tons of steel and they, you know, make steel for bikes all the time. And when they found out that we wanted straight gauge tubing, because we don't use butted tubes or, you know, for, I mean, it's, who cares about weight savings on a cargo bike is what we were thinking in the beginning. And, it turns out it is really nice to have a lighter cargo bike, which we make them as light as we can now. But True Temper was like, oh, you want straight gauge? Sure. We have thousands of feet of it. How many thousands of feet do you want? And we're like, 22 feet would be kind of nice. Yeah. Is that okay?
And yeah.
I'm like, sure. And they sent us a couple. And then eventually we got more and more. And we're up to a couple thousand feet per order now.
That's pretty awesome. Nice.
Yeah.
Something just struck me here. I remember a picture from, I believe, this winter. Weren't you towing someone in an inner tube across the snow yeah. with one of these?
During one of the mini snowpocalypses that we had.
We had a fierce storm, I think, in February or was it in January? I don't remember which one it was. We had a couple of them this year, which mm-hmm. is unusual for us. But yeah, I remember at one point seeing you kind of as one might do with a pickup truck or something yeah. on an old country road. This was in the city, and you were yeah. towing an inner tube with a Metrofeet.
Yeah, I grew up in this little small farm town in the Willamette Valley, so you can't beat that out of me, so to speak. So yeah, I threw a rope on the back of the bike, put it on the seat post, and lash it around an inner tube and threw the neighbor kids on it. And we just started naturally rallying. It was so fun. I could barely keep the bike up. But
yeah,
once you get a little momentum and you stay away from the ruts, it's mm-hmm. really fun. And the kids were screaming. You could hear them
yeah.
all over the block. Just
yeah.
Now, was that an e-assist?
Nope. It's bioelectric.
Yeah, yeah.
Right
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
Got my legs.
It's just hauling your legs.
Yeah.
How does it handle on the snow? I mean,
it's really challenging.
Yeah, because riding a regular bicycle, a safety bicycle, as it were, on snowy streets, mm-hmm. that was hard for me.
Yeah, well, we have wider tires on the bike, so
okay.
we use Big Apples, and they're not as big as like the fat bike tires. They're like 2.0s.
Yeah,
so they're pretty big, mm-hmm. bigger than normal.
2.0, that's 2 inches.
Yeah,
more or less.
More or less, it's 2.0.
Perfect.
Yeah. And if you hit it like a patch of ice or, a rut, that's really challenging. But
right.
if you just kind of, look where you want to go and let your brain do it instead of like worrying about it, it mm-hmm. works out.
Yeah.
Of course, having two kids in the back that are like screaming and thrashing around makes it challenging too.
It's
but
not right. distracting in the slightest.
No, it's great.
What about other unconventional uses for your bikes? Have you heard stories from your customers like I'm taking this to a place I never thought that a cargo bike would go?
Well, yeah. I mean, Charlie over at Trailhead Coffee, that guy is a beast. He takes his bike out on Cycle Oregon.
Oh,
and,
really?
400 mile bike rides for fun.
Uh-huh.
That's great. But when then you have a 120 pound cargo bike and he carries all of his coffee in there and makes 3 stops a day to serve coffee. And when he's done, he's like, yeah, that was all right.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
Worked out okay.
Yeah, totally.
That's pretty good.
One of the rides he was on, he called me up. He's like, well, I just came down Rattlesnake Ridge. I swear to God, I was like riding it like I stole that bike. And I don't know how fast I was going, but I was passing everybody. And I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, okay, is our insurance still good? Okay.
Right.
What kind of brakes do you put on those?
I don't know if his has hydraulic or not, but they're all disc brakes.
Okay.
And
that's
he
good.
Has the big rotors on there.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Does he have an espresso machine on top of the bike?
No, he does drip and pour over.
Oh, okay.
Coffee,
gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that box, it's a beautiful box, it can't be lightweight. It really can't be that light.
No,
but
it
looks very sturdy.
He's the first customer that you can see where we're coming from originally that we let build their own box because we're like, no one can do it right. We're the best.
Well, it's like it's a quality control thing, like Steve Jobs maybe would have. Like it can't look that way because that's dumb. It has to look this way because it's an Apple product.
Yeah, we're just worried that it was going to kind of mess with the. It's our bike. Mm-hmm. Every single bike out there at that point was our bike.
And what if he just uses like plywood, like unvarnished plywood? That would look.
Yeah, and he wouldn't show it to us.
Oh,
but we wouldn't show him the bike we were building for him either, which was kind of fun. So
yeah,
and then we. When we saw that thing, we were just completely blown away. It was so beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just amazing. And then he's gone through 2 or 3 iterations.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's on his second iteration. It has LED lighting down the sides that are powered by the front dyno hub. And yeah, it's just absolutely amazing. It has this blown glass thing that he keeps his hot water in, and this Rube Goldberg kind of still looking device that he uses to heat the water.
It's almost like a steampunk type of thing.
Yeah, it's really cool looking.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Who else?
Nobody. No, that was it.
Well, Emily's bike is... You should talk about Emily's new bike. It's ridiculous. It's amazing and ridiculous.
Yeah, gosh, what do you call that thing? Have you heard...
Frankenbike? I don't
know. Frankenfinch?
It's huge.
The thing is monstrous. So Emily had her bike stolen.
Right.
She had a beautiful Bachfiets, you know, the Bachfiets.nl bike, and she loved that thing. I mean, you could just tell everywhere she was going with that thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she just had this big smile. And
yeah.
Yeah.
And changed her life.
It absolutely changed her life. I mean, it's too bad she's not here so we can hear her story of, you know,
right.
where she started and where she wound up. And
definitely.
And then it was just stolen. And, you know, I met with her, like, I don't know how many weeks or months after it was stolen. And I told her, you know, the quickest way to get your bike back is to buy one of ours.
Liar.
That's right.
Liar.
And then I bought her a bunch of drinks.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah.
But yeah, she really wanted to be able to have a bike that she could carry, you know, six people on. And as it turns out, we wound up building a bike that she can carry nine people on.
Okay.
Because of the rear rack. So you can fit three kids on each bench. So that's six up front. The rider, the operator, plus two kids on the back.
Yeah.
And I've seen her do it, and I'm just, like, shocked every time I see it. And Jamie's like, man, I hope Portland's big enough for that bike. You know? It is a big machine, and she does it. She just gets on that thing and rallies it.
Right,
and she's
right.
not a big person, but you get her on that bike, and she becomes a force to be reckoned
yeah,
with.
Yeah, and it's just... Once you get the momentum going on that thing, or once she gets the momentum going on that thing, it's just she's gliding along,
yeah,
just cruising, yeah. And it's an amazing bike. It's probably one of the bigger boxes we've ever built. Putting on that bike, every time I look at that when it was sitting in the shop before we put it on the bike, I was like, I don't know,
like is this gonna,
I don't know
this is thing, this going to work?
Yeah, this thing is huge.
And well, then, it's two adults, right? Two adults can fit in it.
Yeah,
in a pinch.
Yeah, in fact, the way we tested it out. In the wood shop is Emily and I sat in the box and we're like, yeah, there's some arm room here.
There you go.
This is great. She's like, oh, this is perfect. Like, all right.
Were there special considerations for that much capacity?
Yeah, the bench seats aren't removable.
Okay.
So we made them. One of them folds up so you can still put stuff in.
There we go.
One of them's fixed. And that's to kind of stiffen up the box a little bit too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Because it would have some, flex or torque or whatever.
Well, I'm not entirely sure that it would.
Okay.
But just in case.
You never know.
Because I've seen her kids jumping around in the other bike, and I was like, man, we got to beef this thing up.
Yeah.
You have no idea how much acorn squash is going to go in that box.
Yeah, that's true.
And by the time you get about 300 acorn squashes in the box, it might start to buckle.
Yeah, or how many things from IKEA can you fit in that bike? That's going to be a challenge.
Old bar stools, hammocks, and lockers.
Indeed.
Totally.
Well, an IKEA packages a lot of their stuff pretty compactly, so you get a very heavy load from IKEA in a bike like that.
Yeah, and you know that on that, you know, she wanted to have extra gearing, so we put a roll-off 11-speed hub, or is it 14? Sorry, not 11. 14-speed hub.
Okay. That's a lot of options.
With a belt drive. Yeah, it just keeps going. It's great. Just click, 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 click.
So tell me about belt drive. What do you prefer that to other options?
It's really quiet. Mm-hmm. I like it a lot. Minimal stretch. I mean, it's so nice. And once you set it and get everything bolted down, it just doesn't move.
Yeah.
You have instant response mm-hmm. when you start pedaling that thing. It just goes.
Yeah.
Which is really important when you have a heavy load like that. And it was really important to her not to have electric assist. She just wanted to do it on her own.
Kind of a matter of principle.
I'm not that strong. I'd be like, yeah, give me the electric
assist. Yeah, me too. What, I don't have e-assist on both wheels? Come on.
Yeah, totally. It's the gasoline.
Yeah, I like the idea of electric assist in one way, but then it also, it kind of feels weird to me. Like, I've ridden one or two bikes that have it just to try them out, and I don't know. It feels weirdly unnatural to be traveling faster than you feel like you should be. Like it's one thing if you're on a scooter and you know, throttle up and you zip away, like on your Vespa with 100 mirrors on it or something like that, but on an actual bicycle it feels strange.
Well, I really like exerting myself. I think that's why the cargo bike appeals to me so much. But let me tell you, when you have the bike completely loaded up and you're sitting at that stop sign and you're on that grade and the bike's pointing uphill, electric assist is wonderful just to get off the line. Because once you get that momentum going, the bike just kind of carries itself along.
Yeah.
But, you know, back to the snowpocalypse,
uh-huh.
I took out my e-bike, now sold e-bike. during the snowpocalypse, and it had front assist on the front wheel and then the chain drive on the back wheel. This thing did not have good tires. It had like city slick kind of normal street bike tires. It was an animal in the snow. It just clawed up. Like I was just riding around, no problem.
Huh.
You know, and you know, going through ruts, and I'm just like, this is amazing, because as soon as one wheel started to slip, the other one would carry it through. Yeah. And it's like, you know, I wonder if I could take the sledding hill with this thing, and it just went right up the sledding hill,
really?
Like in the snow. So yeah, I mean, it's just like the e-assist does have a place.
Yeah, front wheel drive, especially in slippery conditions like that, it's just so fun.
I was gonna say, yeah, because then it can tow you along. The classic problem with propulsion has been, and this is where I got in trouble when I had a car one time when I was younger, is that the rear drive pushes you around.
I can tell you were an angel when you were younger. I can tell.
Well,
this is all a lie, folks. What he's going to say right now is all a lie.
It was pure stupidity. I was like, hey, if I shift the car into a lower gear, it'll give me more traction or whatever. That is not true. So it swung around. I was on the I-205 bridge, the Glen Jackson bridge, from Vancouver down to Portland. So I'm going downhill, and I'm like, oh, this is a good idea. I'll put it in lower gear. Mm. And then the entire rear end, you know, that's the driving side, it just kind of swept around in front of me.
Yeah.
And I hit one of those, the thing that keeps you from going into the river. In
that's
theory.
Good. That's good.
And I was wondering about it as, you know, as I hit it, I was like, I sure hope this thing does what it's supposed to do. And it does, as a matter of fact. They're very, very sturdy. But yes, so traction and being slippery and whatnot, if you have front wheel drive, like your bike did, that means it's going to pull you through the snow, as opposed to sliding out from underneath you from behind, I suppose.
Yeah, and you could feel it. You could feel like one wheel start to slide, mm-hmm. and then the other one, you could just kind of feel it catch and carry it through, and then the front, you know, it was going back and forth, like they were taking turns losing traction.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Then I promptly sold the bike. It's like, this is amazing. I got to get rid of this.
It's too good for me to keep.
Give me another skateboard.
So, will Metrofeats ever get into the skateboard building business?
Oh, let's do this.
You know, we don't talk about future products.
Okay. Well, that's good
wink.
Policy.
Wink.
Well, where would people find more about Metrofeats, Phil?
At metrofeats.com.
Okay. That's Metro, F-I-E-T-S?
Yes, F-I-E-T-S. M-E-T-R-O-F-I-E-T-S.com.
Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Thanks for telling us a little bit more.
That's it.
I love, well, we're already at like, what, 50 minutes now?
We can do more.
We still have news and mail. Well, is there anything that we missed that you would like to share? Because if there is something that you'd like to tell people about or forward promote or retroactively promote.
Come to our website, like us on Facebook, tweet at us. We'll tweet back.
Are there any shops where a person could actually go and like handle a Metrofeats?
Yeah, we have a list on our website. Or okay, we should good. If we don't.
There we go.
There'll be one soon.
And there are a bunch of them in Portland. Are they also distributed far and wide across the great United States?
Yeah, in fact, we just opened up our first distributorship in Amsterdam.
Oh, really?
Which is pretty
cool.
Wow. I know, it's really weird.
Are they really like angry about that? There. Like what?
Angry happy?
These are our bikes. What are you doing making these in America? Did they feel like, you know...
I don't know. We'll find out. We'll see if the ship makes it.
You just see huge import tariffs. Like, no way. This is a homegrown industry.
Yeah, totally.
Can't bring in imported box bikes.
Maybe that's why the torches and pitchforks are out front of my house.
Right. Yeah. It'd be like East of Eden, where you pack all the cabbage into the train, and then it gets to New York like 3 weeks later, but all the ice is melted, and it's all rotten. Totally. I hope that doesn't happen to your bikes.
It won't. Yeah, we build them to last.
For one thing, they're not organic. Well, they're not going to rot because, you know, they're not heads of lettuce.
True.
Number two.
It's a good insight.
It's a ship, not a train, which I think maybe that's more reliable.
Yeah.
And it's the 21st century.
That's right.
Yeah. Containers never fall off ships.
There's a lot. This is where we should probably stop talking about this. You know, and
it's all insured.
Yeah.
It's all insured.
But no, it's almost like an inception. It's like, you know, that first the Bachfietzen came. Mm-hmm. Over here, and now they're going back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
It's a full cycle.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
Yeah. Spin cycle.
Okay, all right. Yeah, let's get the mail.
Thank you again, Phil. And best of continued success in the future. This is, you got a good thing going here. Yeah. I love what you folks have made so far. And I mean, I am looking for a new bike. So You never know.
Do you need to take that bike on the max very often?
Depends.
Okay.
Depends on who's watching. Okay. We'll stuff all this in the memory hole when we're done, I guess. You guys read 1984?
Is that a book?
Been a really long time.
I just read it this summer on my tour, and I love that the hole that you throw paper into to destroy it and you know, like, get rid of evidence forever is called the memory hole.
Yeah.
But then war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength, or something like that. Big Brother is watching. Okay, how about some news?
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights. Pedal just as fast as it can into the morning.
All right. Do you want to read this, Corey, or do you want me to?
Do I have it?
You have some of it.
You guys are so pro. I love it.
I forgot to delineate this.
Okay. Oh, no, yeah, I've got
the
it.
One from DCist.org. Which, yeah. Actually, I thought it was desist.org, but it's not.
Let's see here from... Ah, jeez. I've got a bunch of it coming up on my phone here. You better just do it. I can't find it.
By the way, that phone does have the biggest screen of, like, any phone I've ever seen. It's pretty awesome.
Yes.
It hardly fit in the room here.
Yeah, I know. DCist.org. Cortland Malloy goes on a bike ride and rethinks bicycling. This is from Pedal Shift, I believe. Tim Mooney tweeted this at us. Cortland Malloy, thinker of thoughts on cyclists, and that's putting it very diplomatically, went for a bike ride today with Veronica Davis, founder of Black Woman Bike. The ride began at Washington Post headquarters, conveniently located along the 15th Street Northwest cycle track, and the one-time scene of a protest against the columnist by a group of terrorists struck out, replaced with cyclists. That's funny, because he referred to bicyclists as being kind of like terrorists. All we have at the moment are Davis's tweets from a post-ride wrap-up, but WTOP's Kate Ryan was on the ride, and Malloy was wearing a camera, so expect more coverage and video in the future. This article is pretty great, because this is a guy who is saying, hey, bikes suck, and, you know, it wouldn't be that bad if somebody hit them with their car.
Yeah, and he kind of drew the ire of the nationwide bicycling community.
He drew a ton of ire. Yeah, there was more ire than you've probably seen in most places. I think, and it probably well deserved. It was a not elegantly put. It was not that. It was just a bunch of dreck, really. It was just a guy kind of unleashing. You know, even if you don't agree with somebody, there's a line of civility, and he kind of stepped across that line. So it was cool. These people responded not so much with anger and viciousness, but with, like, hey, why don't you come out and ride bikes with us? So thank you, Veronica Davis, for doing that, because that's the sort of thing that we all probably aspire to, but not all of us have that much diplomacy. I think that's pretty awesome. And it sounds like he has been rethinking some of his thoughts on bicycling, which is great.
Yeah.
So anyways... I think that's good news.
Yeah, that is.
The other thing, Aftermath, if you missed the documentary that Joe Beal made about the state of critical mass in Portland and the state of relations between bicyclists, is it terrorists or bicyclists, and the Portland Police Department.
Critical mass might be a mix.
Well, according to the Portland Police Department,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a very interesting kind of exploration of all this, like, the history of some of this stuff going on. And it's... Joe was not afraid to ask the difficult and unpopular questions to kind of get to the bottom of some of this stuff. And some of the people that he was interviewing were, I think maybe they were taken a little off guard or not quite expected or didn't know quite how to respond to it, but kind of putting forth some interesting ideas and both what can we learn from the past about bicycling here in Portland and what can we look forward to in the future. So that's all happening at Clinton Street Theater again. It's September 12th is the date. It's once again just $7 for tickets, and you can get them in advance from Clinton Street Theater. So also upcoming screenings in Roanoke, Virginia, Seattle, Washington, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, if you are not here in Portland. So as many of you are not. If this is your thing, we've got a special deal at this next screening where Bike Smut begins at 9:30 p.m. Not quite my scene, but that is a well-honored Portland institution. So if you're interested, they have a combo deal on that too. Microcosmpublishing.com/aftermath is where you can find more info. So that's
Don't
it.
Don't want to miss it.
Yeah. And then, yeah, it was a great film. I think it's coming to like online, just to be like a Netflix or something. I think they're working on getting it up there as well.
That'd be great. That's great.
Yeah. How about some mail?
We got mail.
Why don't we go back and forth on these? You want to start?
Okay. Yeah, I could do it. So I just click on the link there.
Eric,
sure. Swing Bikes to Vista House.
Oh, yeah. I'll pull that up over here. Eric Iverson, former show guest. I'm sorry I missed that one, by the way. I wish I could have been here to interview him. I'll have to invite him back.
It's a great show.
But yeah, they took swing bikes all the way to Vista House, which is, what is that, like 40 miles out of town or something like that? It's a good, healthy ride. So good on you all.
All right, and Betsy sends us Watch the Portland Bike Network Grow from 1950 till today. And so I guess that's where you can go and just kind of watch the routes appear magically on the screen.
Yeah, I've got it here, and it's progressing from year to year, like 1989 where it is now, not too much bicycling.
And it goes from completely disconnected to mostly disconnected to almost completely connected.
Almost completely connected.
Almost completely connected.
Yeah. So this is pretty cool. Thank you, Betsy, for pointing this out to us. That's pretty awesome.
mapstory.org/maps/1785/#full.
Oh, wait. No, that's just for the full screen. Anyways.
You can type that too, I guess.
Right, right. But we'll have a link up to that. Let's see here. Oh, yes. Last week's mystery donor was Kevin. So thank you, Kevin. That was the guy who said, hey, I can't get your download link, because he's one of the people that instead of using iTunes or some other podcast delivery method, he just pulls the file down manually, which is not a bad way to go. So anyways, he told me there was a problem. We got it fixed. And then he sent us some money, which, very, very much appreciated. We really appreciate that.
So the mystery burp text message came from Dan in Minnesota. He also texted, hello, this is Dan from Minnesota. I am on a smallish tour, episode 197. Tell Dan Flores, I also have been on a road guard and riding with a group of cyclists. Feels like a road march, but faster.
Yeah, they were drawing the comparison between being in the military and doing a road guard and blocking off streets and whatnot. And actually doing corking with a organized bike group ride. So
yeah. A good skill.
Totally. Jim from St. Petersburg in Russia. Dear Aaron and Lisa, I really enjoyed listening to your show with Lenny Anderson while I am traveling and studying in Russia this summer. I have known of Lenny for years, and our paths have crossed in Portland a few times. I actually think he is old friends, or at least acquaintances, with one of my uncles. Anyway, having grown up in Portland, cycled there since a small child, and toured a fair amount in Oregon as an adult, Lenny's stories gave me a much-needed dose of the Velo Oregon good life I miss. His various recollections reminded me of the thrill of biking down the Oregon coast, the bite of a coastal gorge headwind, the fun of birding by bike, and more generally, the special kind of bike freedom we enjoy in Oregon. Both of you were thoroughly enjoyable to listen to as well. Thanks for the great show.
Johnny K sends in a Wikipedia article on the post-vacation blues and tells Brock to buck up.
Yes. which, of course, is a joke. But post-vacation blues is exactly what I had. So I'm well over them by now. It's good to be home.
Glad to have you back.
Yeah. Roger shares, suggested reading, Kunstler's Geography of Nowhere. That's Howard Kunstler, who does some great thinking about the design of urban spaces and whatnot. And he says, you've been, quote, there. So I'm going to have to pick that up at some point and give it a read.
And David from PDX, I work as a nurse on the orthopedic unit, and your friend's experiences with post-surgical nutritional education caught my attention. So, first off, and most importantly, this next bit is not medical advice. Always follow the instructions of your surgeon for recovery. That said, our discharge paperwork recommends a low-fat, high-protein diet, fish, chicken, and high-protein cereals for quick wound healing. Just an FYI, that not all healthcare providers lean heavy on the eat meat to recover quickly advice.
Yeah.
It's good for skateboarders too, actually.
One of our extra episodes here was with co-host Lisa Nims, who talked a lot about vegetarianism, which was a pretty great episode and a little bit off of our usual subject matter. But yeah, thank you, Dave. That's good to know. So you don't have to eat a big steak just to be healthy after a surgery or something.
No, that's good to know.
Yeah. Doug, he got the stickers and postcard that I sent him in the mail. Apparently he felt guilty about taking the cards that Adele had purchased for her her little classroom. So don't feel too bad about that, Doug. That's all my fault. And he says, yes, my lady and I did finish the entire Appalachian Trail, all 2,168 miles.
Wow.
Measured in 2001 when they hiked it. In long distance speak, when someone says in the past tense, we thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail, it means the whole trail. If you intended to thru-hike the entire trail but stop short, then you have to clarify that when making the statement, which I guess it gets kind of political. For example, in 2001, we thru-hiked 1,100 miles of the trail. But they did the whole thing and want credit for it, damn it. We earned every single mile over 6 months in one day, and it was the best thing we've ever done. So, yeah.
That's very impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be fun to go out and do some hiking. I would like to do a backpacking trip at some point, especially because the Northwest has the Pacific Crest Trail, and it's so well connected in many places by transit. Like, it would be easy to, if you had the time, to go up and
do a little stage.
Yeah. Like, I don't know, Leavenworth down to Cascade Locks or something, for example.
Yeah. Get off the road.
Yeah, yeah. I'm seriously considering, instead of a bicycle tour next summer, maybe doing like a hiking trip of some kind. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. But then again, the appeal of bicycle touring is strong. So it's really, it's hard to say no to that. All right. Well, hey, this has been a good show. Phil, thank you again for coming in.
Thank you.
Corey, thank you for co-hosting.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah. You ready for this? Ready for the reading these last, all the things we have to read?
Almost.
I believe in your power. And of course, you know, if you can get to it before the drums, you get extra points.
You got it.
All right. Here we go. Whoops. There it is.
Waiting. Find us on the internet at thesprocketspodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics or guests. Write us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call and leave us a message or text to 503-847-9774. Connect with us on Twitter at Sprockets Podcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Thanks to Hurt Bird for our headline sounder. And thanks to sustaining donors Logan Smith, Shadowfoot, Katrina Mellengard.
I believe that's it.
Roger Grigsby, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertsons, Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson, and Cameron Lean.
Yeah. All right.
Woo.
Have a good one, everybody. Don't do drugs. Stay in school.
All right.
Is this me? It is.
I got to be careful what I say because you have a tendency to record. Broadcast the stuff that is pre.
I really do. Yeah. Well, it's just so much more fun that way. Perfect.
That's got to be me.
Best news ever.
If that's not me, I don't know who it is.
Well, especially if it's on the walls, that's when shag carpeting really shines. It's when it's on the wall.
Yeah.
You can kind of calm it.
Yeah, it's just the idea that I don't know. It's second nature to some people. It's second nature to others. That's not. Holy shit, what am I doing today?
Yeah.
What I mean...
What are you doing?
What I mean is...
Testing, eating cookies. This yeah, I'm going to eat a cookie on the radio.
Oh, you know what? I'm doing that thing again.
A Sprocket Studios production.